In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 148. I'm Brian Shackman. He's John Senecal. On the agenda today, sort of like an early season check-in on our teams and a little bit about the league. We will talk about, Tanner Houck just had that complete game shutout. It was sub 2 hours. We're going to talk about that also, but talk about some of the complaints, maybe connecting injuries to the pitch clock, which I want to know what John has to say about that. We'll talk about John Sterling, and we'll also revisit that story about the World Series shares going to clubhouse attendance, which is an incredible story. So that is on the agenda. John, you must feel pretty good. I mean, the Yankees are doing fine. They don't have their best pitcher, and their superstar outfielder hasn't hit that well.
Yeah, I mean, they stand with the best record. They're scuffling a little bit right now, obviously. But yeah, I do worry about Aaron Judge a little bit because, again, your damn toe thing keeps sitting in the back of my head. But he's running fine.
But on Wednesday, he had a huge hit on Wednesday, and it wasn't a home run. To me, like, that's how you get started, right?
It's a big hit, but he looks lost because up to that point, he was like 0 for 14 with like 7 Ks in the series, and that's not good. And that tells me that he's pressing, right? He's chasing pitches. I didn't see it where he was getting bad calls on pitches like he usually does, like on a low strike. I see it more of him being like what Anthony Volpe was last year, like just pressing a little bit, swinging at balls out of the zone. I have confidence in him because technically, I guess he's not hurt unless we don't know something.
Right.
He doesn't look hurt. So I have confidence that he'll come around. Glaber is a little bit of an issue, I guess. Not only just the
hitting.
I just saw
videos of him like screwing up in the field.
Hitting and fielding. But, we Yankee fans know Glaber is always going to give you some not behind between the ears moments as a player. It's just who he is, and I don't think he'll ever change that. But he did show that a little bit recently, and he's not hitting. He's struggling hitting, and he started off as a leadoff hitter, and he's down to, I think, sixth or seventh in the order. You want to see him come around, and I know he wants to come around because he's in a walk year, too. So Judge...
He's probably feeling the heat, too.
Judge, a little bit of concern. Glaber, a little bit of concern. The bullpen, again, a little bit of a concern. Volpe is fielding the ball, throwing it occasionally still a little crazy. And again,
he's a good ball player.
Good ball player. Great ball player. Totally different ball player than last year. Just a great different approach. Just you can just see it. You can literally see it. Like you can see how much more confident. Yeah.
Yep.
And a little worried about Rizzo too. He seems spacey to me sometimes out there. I don't know if there's lingering effects from that concussion or just seems a little bit out of it. I know he always plays the game a little lackadaisical. He looks a little, like he's doing it his way, right? It's the way that he's used to, but to other people, he might look a little laid back at first base, but I feel like he's had a little bit too many errors this year, too. So that's where I'm standing with the Yankees right now.
Yeah, for me, I'll just say, I prompt my nephew, Jake, he says he wants me to add a segment where I say something nice about the Red Sox in every episode. So I will say this about the Red Sox.
Pitching.
Yeah, I mean, they have the best ERA in baseball as of Thursday, and they haven't played the best competition, but there's enough of a sample size to say maybe there is something there. Although, with Pivetta and Whitlock, they got some injury challenges. And so I think that the pitching is encouraging. I just think that the team doesn't have, and I said this when Bogaerts left and then Betts left, and if Devers is the face of the team, it doesn't have an identity.
Yeah.
And that's my issue, is that and maybe it's this O'Neill guy, and I like him, and the fans are going to love him, and he's willing to do just about anything. And
he's not seriously hurt, right?
No, I don't think so. Maybe I don't think there's a major concussion or anything like that. So I think he'll be back and be fine. But he's the one cat who sort of popped.
Cat. You're using the term cat. I like it.
He jumps out,
And he might be something fans can really enjoy.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I kind of prodded you a little bit when they signed him. Or did they trade for him or sign him? I can't remember.
I thought they signed him.
Yeah, well, I remember I kind of joked you. I'm like, all right, we'll wrap it up the AL East. You've got Tyler O'Neill. But Tyler O'Neill is a player that has had expectations for a few years, and he hasn't really lived up to him, either be a little bit of an injury or just not playing well. It could have just been the fact that he was in St. Louis, and St. Louis was kind of schlubbing a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is that he has a lot of the makeup that Boston fans like.
Yeah.
And I think that's the potential. So that's my nice things. The other stuff in terms of, I mean, because that's sort of not a nice thing. The nice thing is the pitching. The not a nice thing is where O'Neill could step up. It's like Devers. It's just not. He's not that kind of guy. He is not an A alpha guy. He is a beta. He's a great player.
Yeah.
And he plays with joy, and I like him. I just don't think he can be the face of the franchise if you're going to be a really competitive
franchise.
Yeah,
well, and the issue with that is, you know, you don't go out at a trade deadline usually and get a face of the franchise.
No, which so means the expectations are, you know.
Right.
I think what I've come to realize, because the team is a little bit better, weirdly enough, than a lot of people expected, and it's only like 20 games in or whatever, but I think is they're doing that Moneyball thing when they go into the owner and say, you know, 7 games out. All we need to be is 7 games out. I feel like that's kind of the philosophy
right
here, is that just if you can keep it close and maybe get lucky and get that last wild card, then you can justify it. Because that, to me, that's the highest of the expectations. So that's where I feel. I mean, I think in general, you know, baseball-wise, sort of expanding it with John Senecal, Brian Shackman here on Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. I on the flip side, you know, I absolutely marvel at Mookie Betts. He went 5 for 5 the other night with 2 doubles and 2 RBI. I'm like,
he's unreal.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I can't say that I saw that. Like, for him to be able, with the pressure. Now, listen, he's got a lot of hitters there giving him, you know, some padding and some cushion. But I just think he's the best base. And I know Trout's had a great power start and people like Harper. I just think Betts is the best all-around baseball player.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think he's the best all-around quiet baseball player. And it's weird that he's quietly the best, because he's not a quiet player. He's a flashy player.
Well, you always notice him because he's always doing something.
Right. But when he does it, he does it flashy. He doesn't, like, you know, he won't just make a catch and just play it off. He'll pump his chest. He'll do what he's got to do. You know, there were some chains hanging out here and there. But he's just such a great player. He's so fun to watch. And, you know, and you mentioned Mike Trout. I mean, I think, again, great for baseball. Probably not a good thing for the Angels unless they keep playing the way they're playing. Because if he's playing at the caliber of Mike Trout again, and no one's even mentioning the fact about some chronic back issues or anything anymore, He's gonna be a huge chip for them to hold to deal.
You think they'd trade him?
Well, I mean, listen, Mike Trout's been in the league.
If you lose Ohtani and Trout in consecutive years, it's
a crazy thing to think of. But at the same time, Mike Trout's gonna want to win. You know, he's gonna want to win, and that team is not built to win right now. They're just kind of hanging around because the AL West isn't as good as everyone thought it might be. You know,
I just think that's not the. When I covered hockey at ESPN, Barry Melrose used to always say this, and it's not like it's brain surgery. He said, we used to analyze trades, and he didn't even want to be in those shows, because he just said, I'll say every time that the team that got the best player wins the trade. Now, some people, you know, you do like the Herschel Walker trade or whatever,
right.
you know, you can already make arguments, but when it comes to baseball, in general, I think that usually bears itself out. So I don't know why they wouldn't go the other way and just try to rebuild something around. Take the $700 million you saved by not signing Ohtani and spend half of that on. I love what the Red Sox did with, you take a bunch of your pre-arbitration eligible guys, give them 5 years and overpay them. And if half of them pan out, great. And if half of them don't, fine.
Yeah. I mean, the Angels have some good young talent, but they also have some talent that just never can really click, like the Joe Odells, you know, like those kind of guys. But, you know, and then they got the Rendon thing hanging over their head. You know, they've been littered with just some garbage contracts over the last, you know, 10 years, really, dating back to Josh Hamilton.
Yeah, go to, yes.
You know, so it, I mean, I just don't, it's, I think they're one of those teams where it's like, it's going to be tough to be a fan, right? Because they just don't ever, they seem to have it, but they don't. You know, and I don't know. It's not from a lack of spending, because the owner wants to spend money. Maybe it's.
But that's bullcrap, John. They should have loaded up last year. I mean, they had the two best.
But he spends money.
He
just doesn't spend. He doesn't spend it in the right spot, I guess. You know, he's getting bust contracts.
I think that the Astros were so good for so long, it sort of killed motivation. But I mean, I don't even buy that, because the wild cards expanded and you can make the playoffs.
They didn't make it with the best two players in baseball. They didn't even finish over 500, I don't think.
No. I hope that we got to move on, but I love that the Astros.
Oh, it's great, isn't it?
It's just. But
they're getting Verlander back. He's supposed to start.
They're going
to
trade him. If they win,
don't care. The Mets are paying for him.
I get it, but I feel like, say if the season's lost, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's going to be an interesting trade.
It's so funny how you and I, as Yankees and Red Sox fans, look around and always look and say, oh, it's great that the Astros. I think that's in general. A lot of people just don't like the Astros, but as a Yankee fan,
they took a World Series away from them.
I mean, they definitely screwed the Yankees more than they screwed the Red Sox.
Not that they would have won it, but they would have made it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if I were a Yankee fan, I'd hate them forever. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. I wanted your take. You know, Tanner Houck for the Red Sox pitched like the quickest game in over a decade or whatever, and it was sub 2 hours. He had a complete game shutout, and I mean, he's got talent when it's all put together. But to me, I want to merge this with some of the complaints. I don't forget where it came from. I don't think it was Gerrit Cole, but I think he actually went the other way. But there's some people who think that these pitching injuries that we've seen has to do with the pitch clock, and that the arm isn't getting to sort of reset in between pitches enough, or at least as the body's used to. I'm wondering if you think there's any credence to that.
I don't think so. I mean, Tommy John and elbow and shoulder injuries, I mean, they've been around for ages. I mean, as long as you've been talking about Tommy John, and I think it's been pretty consistent. I think it's more so than anything. I think it's more so of the last, I don't know if I want to say 20 years, I'll say maybe 10 years, 15 years. It's more of these players becoming specialized and more of pitchers. You know, you see kids now that are 12, 13 years old that want to be PO only, pitcher only.
Right.
And that's putting more and more tax on their arm, you know? And I think that carries through college, and that carries through especially high school. I mean, they can throw a lot of pitches in high school.
You think it's overuse? Some people think it's underuse.
No, I think it's just something that they use it more coming up through now. And if you're not that, let's say, like, you know, we'll use Steven Strasburg as an example, how they held him out of the playoffs the 1 year because of a pitch limit, right? And then the next year he comes back and they win the World Series or win the next couple years in 2019. But they had a shot to run with him, and they chose not to, and they kept him on a pitch limit.
Which I think in retrospect, they probably would have gone for it, but anyway.
Right. But unless you're that kind of player where they're going to limit you that much and baby you that much, I think it's just a matter of them just being used too much over the course of that time from when they're in, I'll even say like 13 years old, middle school through high school through college and then the minors.
So it's different now, eventually. They're getting used more. Because I feel like this rule set, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I just feel like we're treating these pitchers.
I just don't think it's a matter of 5 seconds is doing it. Now, it might not be 5 seconds because they did take a long time between pitches, some pitchers, but some pitchers also worked at a fast pace when there was no pitch clock.
Right.
Some pitchers are also very accustomed. I mean, they're throwing Tommy John surgeries around like they're Skittles.
Well, it's like you have to get it now.
Right.
I mean,
to be stronger. And then they're like, well, you got a second one, you're going to be even stronger.
Yeah.
But then you look at a guy like Jacob deGrom, and it's like, all right, I'm going to pay this guy to be good every third year.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you want to spend that money.
The bottom line is you don't think there's a correlation.
I really don't think it's a correlation based on the pitch clock. I think it's just more of, I mean, it might be something where it's not as serious as injury as they might say. Like, look at Gerrit Cole. They're going to rehab that. They did the same thing with Tanaka. Maybe they're looking at some of these guys and they're saying, well, you're younger, not 32 like Gerrit Cole, and you're younger. Let's just cut you now. And just come back next year, and you'll be even stronger for the next 3 years. Where Gerrit Cole, they're like, listen, you're at the back end of your,
and we need you now.
We need you now, and let's let it ride out a little bit. And if it doesn't work out, then we cut you after the season, and we basically lose you for the following year.
Right. But by cut, John means have the surgery, not let you go from the team. John Senecal, Brian Shackman here, Fan Base, deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. John Sterling, stepping aside, effective immediately. We'll find out at some point soon I mean, I imagine it's got to be health related, but we can't speculate because we don't know. I just didn't know if you had any thoughts. I mean, I have some thoughts on broadcasting in general. As you have Jack Edwards leaving the Bruins in hockey. You have, of course, Sterling stepping aside with the Yankees. You're losing sort of really distinct, like him or not, he's different. And I feel like every new voice that comes into baseball is generic. So yeah. I didn't love Sterling on the microphone. He's a really nice guy. We've had him on the show. But I do recognize how unique, and I love how Yankee fans love him.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you talk about the nostalgia, or, you know, the older voice or whatever, I think what it is for someone like you and I, it's like we're losing, like you're losing like your grandparent. You're losing like your comfort, you know, you're that. You know, it's like, I don't want to say reliable, but it's that comforting voice. You know, you can depend on it to be there. You know, it's what you're getting. It's not going to be anything different, right? You're going to get the home run calls. You might get a little sauce in some of the home run calls, but it's the same stuff over and over. I mean, it's sad. I mean, because you know, it's literally the end of an era. He's getting up there in years, and you know, he says it's the travel, and I can imagine, yes, it's definitely probably the travel. It's not easy on him, but at the same time, and if you're going to be, 86, 87 years old, I mean, just the pure fact that you're going to get up and just go do that and just live in New York and do it is a lot.
Yeah.
So hats off to him, and I'm super grateful that he was on the show. It was an awesome thing for me as a Yankee fan to experience, at least just talking to him. I know our producer, Matt Stroyce, has met him a number of times.
Yeah, he's gone to dinner with him.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's, by all accounts, an awesome guy, and he's going to be missed. He's really going to be missed. And for Yankee fans, it's going to be a huge void for those guys to fill. I know, is it Ryan Rucco? He's been doing it some, so... He's a little bit seasoned.
He's good.
He does a good job. And you also wonder, you know, is this going to be the end of Susan, too? You know, is she going
to... I think she should step aside, to be honest with you.
I think it might be...
To allow them to have a fresh start. I never was a Susan guy at all, but this has nothing to do with personal taste. I just think you should enable the suits to sort of see what's next instead of trying to... Because she's not going to stick around that long, so why not just...
Look at me? Yeah, she's old, too.
But she may want or need or like the money. I don't know what her contract is.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know how it is, Brian. You've been on both sides of the camera in this business. Usually when you get in this business, part of you likes being heard or being seen.
Yeah.
So
it's hard to step away.
It is really hard to step away. And it's, you know, and for a business like what they do, they're fortunate enough where they really don't have to step away other than the fact that, I mean, they literally could like die in a booth, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just that's the longevity of that kind of career.
Well, I was talking on the show, sorry to interrupt, on my radio show on WTIC News Talk 1080, that my son is interested in broadcasting. And then I was talking to somebody, and this is not, again, I'm not breaking new ground, but in baseball, it's like, 30 jobs? And like the minors, a lot of minor league teams don't even do it anymore. And so, and when you get a job doing what John, like you just said, you can do it for 50 years. Because especially on radio or the audio side of it, you don't need to look good. Who cares what you look like? It's all if you could do the work and you sound great. So,
yeah, was he like 64 years he was on air?
Yeah, I mean, it was...
Something like that?
He got the job when he was like 50 in New York, by the way, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
That he wasn't like, you know, 30 years old or whatever. So like, do I say to my son, you shouldn't do this or want to do it because there's really no... I mean, it's virtually impossible to get these jobs.
Yeah. I just think to myself when you hear these stories and you're like, you think, where are you going to be if you're alive at 87? Like just, I mean, that's just well, to be that old to begin with.
Yeah.
And then to sit in the mecca of baseball or in sports in general, that some would argue, and be able to do that.
It's well, no offense to my dad. He's 84 or 5. He couldn't do that job at 84. He couldn't do it.
Some people couldn't do it at 25. Yeah. I mean, it's just how it is. I mean, hats off to John Sterling.
Yeah. It was really good we had him on the show. And he, honestly, like when you get, you and I have met a lot of people who have names, big names, and then more often than not aren't who they you think they are. And he was so gracious and kind, and he was thanking us.
Yeah.
Which was wild.
You don't see that too often.
No. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Tell this story.
Speaking of thanks.
I love these stories. And I don't think there are enough of them because I think, you know, and again, if I made $20 million and could make another million, like just because I already have $20 million doesn't mean I don't want that other million. Like people make money, they deserve to make what they get. But when you see the disparity, You know, and I think about like the NBA, I think they should underwrite the WNBA more. It's not like they should have salaries that are on par, but I do think that that the women should make more money. And so tell the story about the World Series champs and the clubhouse attendance.
So the World Series every year, the winner and the runner-up get a pool of money to dole out to...
And they get shares. They
get shares. So basically the way it works is you get... the player's pool gets 60% of the minimum games played, the gate ticket. So you can have a 13 minimum games played throughout the playoffs, and 60% of all ticket gate sales or whatever throughout all of Major League Baseball games go to the players.
Really?
And that's how the money's divvied up.
The teams don't get any of the ticket sales.
The owners get the rest.
Okay.
The owners get the rest. So that being said, usually it's around like $100 million is what you're talking about as far as what you dole out in the recent years, in the recent few years. So I don't know if the exact number has been made public, what the overall pot was, but what it came down to was, you know, the players were going to get like $500,000 each, the winning team, and the Arizona Diamondbacks were going to get around $300,000, I think. And
for each share.
Each share.
Because sometimes they'll split the shares in half and quarters and stuff like that, but each share, that's a lot of money.
Right, right. So what each team did and decided to do was share those shares evenly across the board with their clubhouse staff. And again, we don't know the exact numbers of all the clubhouse staff, but we're talking about, you know, people that would run the umpire's locker room, people that are, you know, pulling your jock straps off the floor, people that
cleaning
are
your cleats.
Cleaning your cleats, scrub, you know, packing your food up, you know, cleaning the bathrooms, that kind of stuff. You know, like the Bensons of the world, if you make an old reference to an old movie. You know, the maids, basically, the gophers, the glad handlers, you know.
Who make, like... less than teachers, you know,
or basically are guys who depend, guy, men and
they depend
women.
On tips.
They depend on tips. They work depending on tips. And at the end of the year, I'm sure, you know, across Major League Baseball, professional sports in general, I'm sure they're compensated nicely, but not to the tune of $500,000 or $300,000. Now, we all know, obviously, after taxes and that, it's not what they're going to get. But you're talking about, you know, some of these stories, you know, people are paying off their mortgages. People are you know, one guy like, flew to Baltimore and took all his buddies out to a bar and, you know, drinks on me. And it's life-changing stuff.
That's exactly the term that I saw. It was life-changing. That I just think that's cool. Because these guys, obviously, they work hard to get to the bigs. But and those clubhouse attendants, they love those jobs. But they do depend on the generosity of the team to make their living, which is kind of stressful, I would think. I just think it's really cool.
Yeah, it's. I just imagine being dropped $500,000. Just, I mean,
I wouldn't mind it.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it in the broader picture, you know, all these CEOs and stuff across the globe, you know, take notice, do something right,
do more. Like do I more. Think Bezos, like his ex-wife is doing 10 times what he does.
Yeah,
and I have one teammate of mine in college is a billionaire. And we got along fine. And I'm honestly like, well, why doesn't he just call me up and say, hey, Shaq, you know, here's $15 million so you live better. You know what I mean? Because it's like that's like the equivalent of him giving me $100. You know what I mean? Like, I just like.
But it's crazy. I mean, you think like after all the tough times and the COVID and everything, you get a stimulus check for $1,000, right? I mean, what is that doing to you as a family? Now, there might be some people that greatly would change their lives, right? $1,000. But when you're talking across the board and people that are contributing the majority of back into the system, $1,000 is nothing.
No.
Right? But if you drop $50,000 on somebody.
That changes things.
And that doesn't need to be government done.
Yeah. No, it's funny. I'll end on this because it has nothing to do with baseball. I had the same conversation on my show with Pell Grants. It's like, oh, Miguel Cardona, the head of the Department of Education, says, we're trying to get the Pell Grants from $7,400 to $8,000. And I'm like, well, when your college costs $90,000.
Right.
Like, and the only people who can get Pell Grants make $50,000 or less. Like, you're really not helping a lot of people.
Imagine, like, and he has to say that with a straight face, knowing all along it's absolute.
It doesn't help anybody
at all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it helps people, but even the people it's geared to help, it doesn't help them that much.
No.
And the thing is, people in that income bracket, if you're a good student, you're going to school for free. Because a lot of the schools, they completely subsidize tuition for.
Here's your $5 Dunkin' card.
Yeah, thank you. That's it. 148 in the books. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.